Division of labor and increased productivity. Imagine starting a pin factory where an uneducated worker tries to make pins alone. He struggles through 18 steps and barely produces one pin a day. However, if you assemble a team of 18 uneducated workers, each specializing in a single step, the outcome changes dramatically. Instead of just 18 pins, this team can produce nearly 50,000 pins daily. Division of labor works by reducing the time wasted when workers switch between different tasks. When each worker focuses on a specific skill, their time becomes more productive. This concentration also promotes innovation. For instance, the invention of improved fire engines came about when a boy, who used to manually operate a water valve, devised a clever string mechanism for it. This innovation was made possible because the boy could focus all his attention on the task. Money and trade. As productivity increases, sometimes there's too much of one thing and not enough of another. For example, if a butcher has extra meat but the baker doesn't want it, they face a problem. This is why money was invented. Instead of swapping goods directly, the butcher can sell meat to anyone who wants it and get money in return. Then, the butcher can use that money to buy bread from the baker or any other goods needed. If the butcher wants something other than bread, like cheese, they can use the money earned from selling meat to buy cheese from someone else in the market. This system allows people to specialize in what they do best, which increases overall productivity. This specialization creates a market where goods can be traded based on demand and everyone can get what they need. In the past, countries believed that their wealth depended mostly on how much gold and silver they saved up. This approach, known as mercantilism, was the prevailing economic theory in the 18th century. Tradable goods and economic prosperity. In the past, countries believed that their wealth depended mostly on how much gold and silver they saved up. This approach, known as mercantilism, was the prevailing economic theory in the 18th century. Governments imposed taxes on imports to prevent money from leaving the country. At the same time, they offered subsidies to boost exports, hoping to attract money from other nations. This approach, known as protectionism, was based on two flawed ideas. Firstly, it wrongly assumed that gold and silver were the ultimate indicators of wealth. In reality, these metals are just commodities, like grain or meat, and their value can fluctuate. Secondly, protectionism mistakenly believed that one country could only succeed by making its neighbors poorer. However, nations can actually become wealthier by engaging in trade, even when their neighbors are also prosperous. Labor and economic value. More important than precious metals like gold and silver is the work people do, because only labor can create goods and services that can be traded. This is why the effort put into making something reflects its real worth. Consider why making things is valuable for society. For instance, producing pins generates three types of earnings. Workers are paid for their work with wages. The factory owner earns money from selling pins. And the person who owns the land where the factory is located earns rent. The result of all labor is called stock. The stock has two main uses. Some are used right away to support the owner. Some can be used to make money on their own. When it's used this way, it's called capital. Types of capital and national wealth. Capital comes in two forms, fixed and circulating. Fixed capital, like a machine for sharpening pins, stays with the owner and helps produce goods. Circulating capital, such as stocks owned by merchants, needs to be invested or spent to make a profit. A nation's wealth isn't measured by its reserves of gold and silver alone. Instead, it's determined by its ability to produce goods that can be traded. This ability to create things that people want to buy is what really makes a country rich. The invisible hand at work, benefits of self-interest in trade. Selflessness is often praised, but acting in our own self-interest can be good for everyone. People naturally look out for themselves. This self-interest drives us to trade. For example, your local butcher or grocer sells you meat or produce not just to be nice, but because they want to earn money. This self-interest also pushes them to provide good products. If they don't, you might go somewhere else. Thinking about their long-term interests stops them from overcharging or selling bad stuff. This self-control is a good thing in trade. It means rules from the government are only needed if sellers don't control themselves well enough. Self-interest and society's benefit. An individual's self-interest can benefit society as a whole. When people have money to invest, They usually prefer to invest it in local businesses rather than foreign ones because it feels safer. Additionally, since people are motivated by their own gain, they invest in ways that will give them the highest return. Despite these actions being selfish, they can actually increase overall societal income. More money goes into local industries, and investments are made in successful ventures that generate more profit. Because increased income comes from increased production, our investments help society produce more in general, leading to greater wealth for the nation. It's as if an unseen force is guiding us to support society's interests, even though that wasn't our original intention. Government's limited role in a free market. A free market boosts economic growth, so the government's role should be minimal. Individuals acting in their own interests are beneficial, but what about the government? Simply put, the government should only handle a few key responsibilities. It should protect society from violence or invasion by maintaining a professional army even during peacetime. It should also ensure the rule of law by enforcing legal rights and punishing crimes. Additionally, the government should construct and maintain public infrastructure like roads and bridges, which are too complex or expensive for individuals to manage. Moreover, it should support commerce and education, such as providing universal basic schooling. Beyond this, the government should not intervene, as it could harm economic growth. Instead of taxing or regulating commerce, the government should support a free market where buyers and sellers can freely trade across borders at mutually agreed upon prices. No trade tariffs or restrictions like those under mercantilism should exist. Minimize taxes in a free market for efficient growth. Taxation in a free market should be minimal, covering only essential government costs. Everyone should pay taxes based on their income, and those benefiting from transactions should also contribute. A free market boosts economic growth because individuals often understand their needs better than the government does, benefiting society as a whole. For instance, while grapes could be grown for wine in Scotland in greenhouses, it would be much more expensive compared to doing so in France. Following the advice that it's cheaper to buy than to make at home, people can see that producing wine in Scotland doesn't make much sense. Under mercantilism, the government might have aimed to avoid imported wine and promote Scottish wine production, despite the impracticality. A free market helps prevent such costly errors. Key points: 1. Division of labor enhances productivity by focusing workers on specific tasks, boosting output significantly. 2. Money facilitates trade by allowing flexible exchange of goods and services based on demand. 3. Labor, not precious metals, creates real economic value through the production of tradable goods. 4. Capital, both fixed and circulating, supports economic growth by investing in productive assets. 5. Self-interest in trade benefits society by driving competition, quality, and efficient resource allocation. 6. Limited government intervention in a free market encourages economic growth and individual initiative. 7. Minimal taxation in a free market supports efficient growth by letting individuals allocate resources effectively.